This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
But right now, Mike, our guest today was the WNBA's draft and the number one overall pick in that draft. To no one's surprise, was the two-time national champion from Connecticut, Tina Charles, who joins us for a moment here on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Tina, Mike, and Mike, congratulations. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. It's kind of early, but I'm doing really good.
Well, not for us. Boy, we're about to have lunch, yeah, Tina, to be honest with you. For us, this is not so early. Congratulations. Listen, watching your team and the run that you had through the season was incredible. And my partner, Mike Golic, here played 9 years in the NFL, and he always tells me no one ever goes into a game intimidated. Now, you went out there and you were just crushing people. Did you feel many nights as though the teams you were playing went into the games not feeling they had a chance to beat you?
No. I believe when you wear a UConn jersey, you have that target on your back. And I believe that everybody's going out there to play hard and trying to knock the number one team down. But we just had that determination, and Coach always challenged us at practice for us to want to go out there and just dominate the games.
And as far as the game, the last one against Stanford, you guys get that win, two straight years undefeated, 78-0. Can you just let us know the feelings of you and your teammates right when that game ended?
Just unbelievable. You know, I was able to be fortunate to be on both teams, and both teams really just fought hard in practice, and we went through all the challenges that Coach had threw at us to make us better individuals on and off the court, but all together as a strong team.
Any thought? What was, you know, we had Gino on, and he said he didn't yell at you guys at halftime when you only scored 12 points in that championship game. You can tell us a real story. Did he jump on you guys a little bit?
He was a little tense, but as far as just giving us that confidence that we could go out there and get the lead back and come out with the win, he definitely did that.
Mike and Mike, Tina Charles is the number one pick in the WNBA draft. How do you expect things to change for you now? You come from a place where your program was so dominant. Now you go to another level on the professional level. What are your expectations?
I just want to go out there and just have an impact on that team. I'm just ready to learn everything and just start fresh and just have a great year.
So the last 2 years, you're 78-0. So as soon as you experience your first loss in the WNBA, how mad are you going to be?
it's going to be a bitter taste in my mouth, but I'm sure we'll be able to learn from it.
Tina, it was awfully exciting to watch and certainly brought a lot of attention to a sport that for a lot of people who may not usually pay attention were watching to see what your team did. Congratulations on a great year. Congratulations on being the number one pick in the draft. And thanks for a few minutes this morning.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
There's Tina Charles, now the number one pick in the WNBA draft, staying local with the Connecticut Sun on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Their run was incredible. And when we had Gino on the other day, I thought the most interesting thing he said to us was this. And we have it, right? Is that up there? There it is. Because I asked him, do you think it was, some people would suggest this was bad for women's college basketball.
Right.
There's a sport that is trying to grow. There is certainly more attention on it now than there has ever been before. When you and I were kids, Mike, I have to be honest with you, I didn't know there was women's college basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
No one paid attention to it at all. Now, certainly, that is totally different.
Absolutely.
The games do good ratings on ESPN and everything else. And the way they dominated this year, some might say, in fact, I've heard a lot of people say it's bad for the sport because it took a lot of the interest out of it. You just know they're killing everybody. We brought that up to Gino. Here's what he said.
Obviously, it's not bad because Stanford almost beat us last night. I think the longer we do this, the closer teams are going to get to the level that we're at, and I don't see how that could be bad. There's a difference between someone setting the bar and making everyone else rise to that bar and us all coming down to a mediocre level and pretending that there's parity or whatever the case may be. So I'm hoping that it's good for the game, that players realize how hard they have to work to be like Maya Moore and Tina Charles, and teams realize how hard they have to work to be as good as Connecticut was this year.
It's a great answer.
Well, it is. There's no doubt the other teams have to rise up. Now, obviously, they lose Tina Charles. Maya Moore comes back, and they always get great recruits, so it's not like they're going to get work. I mean, they may, you don't know where they take a step talent-wise, but they always have excellent talent. The other schools have to step up.
The point is, what he's saying is, if you want parity, if you want there to be greater competitive balance, good. It needs to be because everyone else
gets
better.
That's exactly what I said. Yeah, everybody's got to step up to them.
Not because we get worse.
Sure. Everybody's got to step up to their game.
And I thought that was a very good answer.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit Progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
Dennis Eckersley, Hall of Famer, via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Listen, The thing about the Joe West situation, Eck, that I think is interesting is, listen, we all admit baseball's better when it's tight, 3 hours, it's tight. But Yankees, Red Sox, I got to be honest, Eck, I've never watched it and thought I'm bored. You know, it's good baseball.
But, you know, just the name, Joe West. I mean, here he is behind the plate with the tightest zone in the game, in game one, squeezing both pitchers. And he's telling me, let's hurry up the game. Don't be afraid to ring somebody up. You know? I mean, it's the Joe West show, if it comes right down to it. And he's got a lot of nerve to even pop off.
Yeah, I kind of feel that. One of the things I've always had a problem with in the NFL officials feel like Switzerland. They don't take sides. But NBA officials and Major League umps have styles. And not if not agendas, they... You can predict stuff. Is Joe West just one of these guys that needs to, that maybe has too big of an ego? Is that an unfair shot?
Too big is one thing. You know, you can't miss them. You know, that's the thing about umpires, right? If you know they're there, then something's going on, right?
Right.
And he's always, you know, not only that, he seems like he's always tempting a player to get mad at him.
Yeah.
You know, like if the pitching coach comes to the mound, he'll be there right away, just in case somebody has a problem. You know what I mean? So, because I've watched him closely over the years. I mean, he still is a good umpire, but there's some of the stuff that he does that makes players get upset.
You know, Dennis Eckersley joining us, part of TBS's coverage all season long. This weekend, Sunday, it's the Yankees at the Rays at 1:30 Eastern. I'll be watching along with the Tiger and the Masters. Good Sunday of sports. Here's the thing, is that Dennis, and you know, you and I have met several times and talked several times, is America is a country, and I have no problem with this, we reward people who are great. Great surgeons, great pitchers, great anything. Couldn't I make the argument that we ask more of the Yankees, Red Sox? They move game times, they do more interviews, they've earned the right to step out of the box a little more. Couldn't I argue that?
Absolutely. Get over it. I mean, I'm not going to get too deep into this, but baseball is about the Yankees and the Red Sox over the course of what, the last 7 years? Easily, since 2003. You know, that is the game. I mean, and then, TV kowtows to them. I mean, and not only that, you know, you can complain all you want about how long the game is, but how many great games were there? You know, I mean, how many great games have you seen over the years? So, I know baseball takes too long, but if anything, the Red Sox and Yankees, who cares?
Yeah, as we said earlier, they don't have parking meters in stadium parking lots because the game takes as long as the game takes, and that's it. As far as umpiring in general, Joe Buck suggested a while back that we should widen the strike zone to speed the game up. I don't want to screw with the game because I think at its core it's good. If you were to implement something to speed it up, throwing to first, the home plate zone. I mean, what would you do?
Well, you know, I'm a pitcher, and so I make the zone a little bigger, man. But maybe a little, you know, get the corner a little bit more. You can forget about that high pitch. You know, forget about the high pitch. That's not, if you can give more, if it's wider. Now, obviously, the hitters aren't going to like that. But, and the thing that you can't change, and maybe you try to, is for them not to step out of the box. But how do you do that?
You can't.
You can't. I saw Hernandez try to do it the other day. Somebody called for timeout. He wouldn't give him timeout. You know, but the pitcher stopped, so he gave him timeout.
Right.
Right? You know, so I don't know how they could speed the game up. How do you, what do you do if you don't get back in the box fast enough? How do they do that? Take a run away? I mean, what do you do?
No, it's a
problem.
Did you take anything from the initial series, the Yankees Red Sox? Was there any big picture headline you took from it, or should we take nothing from it?
I mean, as far as what it's going to be like this year.
Yeah, I mean, just when you came out of that series, did you have any different opinion than you had going into the series?
Not at all. Absolutely not at all. I think those teams are so evenly matched, and I don't think anybody did anything drastic enough to make one better than the other. Necessarily.
Yeah. Good stuff, Eck. Great talking to you. Part of TBS's coverage all season long. Thanks, bud.
All right, Colin.
ESPN The Magazine senior NBA writer Rick Bucher. And Rick, you just heard me talk about how Mark Cuban said the Mavs can kill anybody in the West. Everybody's got problems. They're vulnerable. Does he have an accurate assessment of the conference?
I would say yes. I would say everybody has a certain degree of vulnerability, and I believe that the Dallas Mavericks, as constituted, have as good a shot as anybody at coming through. But all that said, the Lakers' vulnerability is more within their own control. If the Lakers play up to their ability, they are still clearly the best team in the Western Conference, and I would dare say in the entire league, when they play up to their potential. Dallas has a weakness is they still struggle against really quick point guards, and they don't have a great degree of athleticism on their front line. And so certain matchups, you know, Pau Gasol, Lamar Odom, and Andrew Bynum being one, are going to cause problems for them. The Ty Lawsons, the Tony Parkers are going to cause problems for them. You can go around to every other team and say, yeah, they've got this flaw or they've got that flaw, and it's a roster flaw. It's a physical Achilles heel. The Lakers really don't have that when they have all their pieces. Yeah, point guard's a little shaky, but the rest of their team is constituted that they can compensate for that. And so, in a way, Mark is right, but the caveat is that the Lakers' vulnerability is of their own making in a way. You know, they need to get back on the beam and realize that, yes, we can't just out-talent teams. We have to meet their energy, and then our talent will carry us through. And quite honestly, I don't know if you remember this, Jason. I mean, we had this feeling with the Lakers at the end of last season and early on at points during the playoffs, particularly in the series against Denver, that they just, we questioned, you know, are they really willing to put it forth? And then they ended up champion. So I see more of the same. And it's why I still believe that the Lakers are the team that ultimately is going to come out on top.
What's their level of frustration with Andrew Bynum's lack of being able to stay healthy?
You know, I mean, it's become an accepted fact there. I would dare say that the level of frustration there is probably higher with Pau Gasol and his contention that he is, hey, I'm a really tough guy, I'm a physical guy, I'm a guy we should play more through. And guys on that team, Phil Jackson and Kobe Bryant at the head of the line going, hey, you know what, you need to toughen up at the defense. We don't want to hear you talk about it. We want to see you physically pound people around the basket. We want to see you grab tough rebounds. We want to see you dunk on people rather than trying to throw up a feathery jump hook. That's what we want to see. We don't want to hear about you need more touches in the triangle, or when Kobe posts up, that creates an imbalance on the floor with us. We want to see you do some physical things, because that's what we really need. Until we see that, all this other chirping is kind of annoying.
As far as the rest of the West goes, Rick, as you said, everybody's got that flaw. The Lakers' flaw is more controllable. Yep. Who's the one of those teams you go 2 through 8? They're only separated by a couple of games. Who's your favorite there to make it to the Western Conference Finals?
Boy, that's so tough. I mean, I still, when healthy, when they have everything together, the Denver Nuggets, I believe, are just, they have all the rudiments. If they have Kenyon Martin, they've got the defenders to get it done, and they have that go-to guy, Carmelo Anthony, who can score in any situation, who can get his shot in any situation. You know, the other team, if it weren't just for their youth, the team that I really like are the Oklahoma City Thunder. I know that their main guys have no playoff experience, and I know that physically and mentally it's just a huge drain when you've never experienced that before. But they're one of the top 5 defensive field goal percentage teams in the league, And they have a guy in Kevin Durant who, much like Carmelo Anthony, can get his shot and can score in any situation. And when you play that kind of defense, and you have that kind of go-to scorer, those are the rudiments that make for very tough playoff teams. And, you know, they're probably going to wear out, but I don't think they're going to be an easy out. And I would not be surprised if they found themselves in the second round of the playoffs.
He's ESPN The Magazine NBA writer Rick Bucher. Rick, as always, appreciate your time with us all night. Have a great one. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, Jason.
Bob Herrick of ESPN.com joining myself, Ron Russillo, here on the Scott Van Pelt Show on ESPN Radio. Bob, you're down there for Augusta. What did you think of Tiger's round?
Hey, Ryan. Well, are you talking today? So far, it's kind of just very steady. I guess he's doing the sorts of things that you have to do to hang in a golf tournament. Nothing spectacular, but nothing bad. He's made one bogey, one birdie. He's going to the 13th hole where he should have a good chance to make a birdie. But, if you didn't know all that had gone on, it's just pretty routine stuff.
Is the course playing the same way it was yesterday, where it felt like guys could get some decent scores?
No, I don't think so. Today it appears to be a good bit more difficult. The weather's very nice. It's cooled off some, a little breezy, but what they've done is they've put the pins on a lot of the holes in some tougher spots. When they put them near the edge, and I think I counted up 9 or 10 holes where there's pins that are within 4 or 5 paces of the edge.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty precarious. It means you really got to be careful about where you miss your shots. If you miss it on that same side, it's pretty tough. So they're having it a little bit tougher on the greens today, and you can tell by the scoring. I mean, only a couple of guys are really doing much, and the guys who were in the lead yesterday are doing all they can to hang on.
Has the reception been as warm as it appears to be, both by his comments and stuff that we've seen from television?
Well, I don't sense that it's more than before or what it was before. I think it's nice. I think it's decent. It's certainly nothing negative. But I think he overstated it a bit, or maybe he didn't pay attention to it much before. Maybe he's so much more aware of what it's like that when he heard nothing but cheering, he thought that was really good. To me, it seemed a bit on the subdued side the last 2 days, actually all week. Usually when Tiger starts doing anything, it gets crazy loud. I'm not sure it's been like that, but I think every round that we go on, it gets better and better for him in that regard. They certainly have been welcoming him, and they're cheering the good golf.
ESPN.com's Bob Herrick joins us here from Augusta. Scott Van Pelt Show, Ron Russillo on ESPN Radio. Tom Watson turned, 67 this week?
Tom Watson he's 60 now, but shot 67.
Oh, 67, that's right. He scored 67.
Right.
I thought he was shooting his age, which would have been pretty impressive.
Absolutely. He's 60 years old, and he shot 67 yesterday, which actually matched his best round ever here. And he's won this tournament twice, and he's been playing it for 37 years. And hadn't shot 67 in 20 years or over 20 years, and he does it at age 60. It was pretty impressive on a lot of levels.
Why have the older players been able to do so well early on?
Well, yesterday it was set up a bit easier. A nice day. Watson is unique in his ability to strike a golf ball even at age 60. You talk to any of the players about the sound that it makes when he strikes a ball, and it's a little bit different than some. I mean, he hits it so solid, even at his age. He had his right hip surgery in 2008, and that really helped. He was suffering with a bad hip for several years, and all of a sudden the pain went away and it's freed him up, and he just hits the ball beautifully. And of course, putting has been a problem for him probably for 25 years. I mean, it really is what kept him from winning more. Tom Watson stopped winning majors at age 34 and went a long period there from 35 to into his late 40s, where he only won twice. But he's hitting ball great at this late stage. I mean, obviously, he came within a whisker of winning the British Open last summer, and he didn't figure to do well here. This golf course has gotten too long for him, but he put it together for one day, and he's still kind of hanging in there today. He's one over on his round, four under for the tournament, but that's probably more what we would expect.
Well, Bob, thanks for your help today, and enjoy the rest of the tournament. It should be a great weekend.
Great. Thanks very much, Ryan.
Log on to ESPN.com/podcenter or ESPNradio.com for more great podcasts.